This is a podcast by The Straits Times.
So my mistake was the complacency to think that this will last forever.
This, the whole episode with the cannabis.
It happened. There are repercussions. Everything happens for a reason.
What has swimming given you?
8 years after his stunning 100-meter butterfly win at the 2016 Rio Olympics, Singapore's greatest athlete, Joseph Schooling, has called time on his career. ST's assistant sports editor, Rohit Brijner, meets Schooling to catch up.
Hey, Joseph. Welcome, man. I was just thinking, you know, you're only 28 years old, right? And, you know, you spent all your life in water. It's just strange to say the word retired.
It is extremely strange. I think I've had quite some time to mull over this moment or to think about it, process it. So right now, when I hear that word, it doesn't take me aback as much. But nonetheless, if you dedicated your whole life to something, yeah, stepping into another phase or another chapter, whichever you'd like to coin it, is definitely both scary, exciting.
There can be actually downsides to winning an Olympic medal. But one of the things is you become famous. Suddenly you walk down the street, it's different. People call you, you know, they want to sponsor you and you're modeling and whatnot. What's this jump like, this life?
To say it's overwhelming actually doesn't do it justice. It's a whole different world. And in times like that, you look for like a mentor or someone who's been in those shoes before in order to guide you, and then you take it to the next level. There's none of that. No, you don't have that in Singapore. So I had to figure out a lot of things by myself with the help of the people around me. And sometimes, or most of the time, it didn't go according to plan. It was more negative than positive. But on the flip side, you can have 1,000 negatives and you have that one positive. And I still consider that a success because you're still moving in the right direction. It's like Thomas Edison and the light bulb, right?
Athletes often, when they win a gold medal, they actually go into little depression. And that depression is caused by the fact that your whole life has been focused on chasing something. And then at 21 years old, right, you got it. And then you think, now what? So I was wondering, what happened to you when you won gold?
There are two components of that, right? You got the chemical side where it's, okay, you're getting just pumped with endorphins and dopamine and everything from working out and experiencing that high, right? Athletes, we all have addictive personalities. Like, that's how you get to that level. So you're always chasing that high, but like life, things always don't work out that way. That's one. And two is routine and fulfillment. So you're used to doing everything operating at such a high level. Go, 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 go. That's your norm. Now what happens when you take a fish out of water? Things change. And if you don't have an area where you can focus that kind of drive and attitude and that fulfillment, I mean, things can go quickly, like sideways.
Do you lack the same focus or drive that you had had before?
I say the first year, yes. Second year, I was playing catch up. And then the third year, I was just overthinking.
What mistakes do you think you made after you won your gold?
So my mistake was the complacency to think that this will last forever because I'm so far ahead. Now that not many 21-year-olds can understand it. Add on ego, add on pride, add on that like things I see, like I'm never going to be shot down attitude. Like, yeah, that's a recipe for complacency. So that's one of the lessons that I learned, and I'm going to continue to remember that in my next phase.
So how did this complacency play out? In the sense that you didn't practice hard enough, or you just became overconfident, or what was it?
Overconfident, entitled, actually would be the direct way to put it. I felt like I didn't need to work as hard anymore because I got to that level. And now looking back, yeah, the entitlement might have been one factor. My dad was really worried going to Asian Games or even Worlds in 2019. With the form I was in, he used to send Eddie long emails. You've seen the way my dad emails, all in caps. And Eddie would just call him and be like, Colin, look, Joe's sole mission on this planet was to win an Olympic gold medal. And he emphasized an Olympic gold medal, one. Whatever happens after is his choice. But the whole reason he's here is because to win that one medal. So now you're thinking about steps ahead. Of course, we're past that, right? But can you actually blame the kid for letting off letting off some steam or taking his foot off the gas pedal after he's accomplished his lifelong dream at 21. I think that helped put things into perspective as well. But yeah, entitled, and also I think deep down, I accomplished what I wanted to.
So explain this being volatile in the pool.
The way I trained was, you know, I'm a very volatile person in the pool. You ask any of my teammates that, right? And doing that at 21 versus doing that at 24, 25 is a whole different game. And I refused to change or see things differently. I refused to adapt. So I felt like if it ain't broken, don't fix it. I think everyone going there should have the same mindset to be the best. And if one person doesn't hold the same sort of mindset or motivation or drive, don't be there. Because one, I don't think you deserve to be here. And two, get out of my way, you know? So that would in turn be vocalized into fights, like verbal fights or taunting. You look at a team, the best teams in the world, you have every single team member keeping each other accountable. I didn't mean that in a personal way. And all of them knew that it wasn't a personal attack on me and them. No, none of that. That's childish. But you have to understand that once you step in a place like Texas, for example, you're of a different caliber. And if you fly that flag high, you better live up to it. If not, no one's stopping you. The door is over there. So that's the kind of level we like to keep.
Did you ever think of calling Michael for advice?
First time I called Michael was my third year, the NCAAs after the Olympics. And those NCAAs when I was with Caleb, at the 100 fly final, you know, I was like out of shape and not in the best spot, right? So yeah, just very anxious. So I called Michael and I was like, Michael, how do you deal with all these, like the scrutiny, and it almost makes you fall out of love with swimming. And he gave one very simple sentence. He said, why do you swim? I'm like, huh? Why do I swim? He's like, who do you swim for? I'm like, swim for myself and my parents, people around me. He's like, exactly. You look up in those stands. Those are the people making the noise. Do you actually swim for them? I was like, no. I'm like, okay, go figure. Good luck. So Michael gave really good advice, but he wanted me to have to understand and learn in my own way.
So let's come to maybe one of the more difficult periods that you've been through. You know, this the whole episode with the cannabis, right? So was it embarrassing? Was it humiliating? What was it like to go through that?
It was definitely embarrassing and humiliating. At the same time, I believe that everything in life has its lessons, right? Everything happens for a reason. The truth of the matter is, it happened. There are repercussions. And life goes on, you know? I'm lucky to be able to sit here and talk to you. But the most I would say is, everything happens for a reason. Take the positives out of the negatives.
Do you think that with great champions, you are a great champion, you are possibly our greatest sporting champion, is there a certain level of responsibility that we expect about how they conduct themselves? Is that fair or is that unfair?
I do think that athletes given the platform, I would hold myself to higher standards, right? And I keep going back and forth with this one comment I saw online. It said, politicians around the world, for example, they're embroiled in all sorts of sketchy things, right? We're human, right? Sometimes people forget that, you know, things happen. Now, an athlete does that thing, and all of a sudden, the phrase of, oh, well, the athlete shouldn't be doing that because my kid looks up to that athlete. Now, the skeptical side of me will say this. It's, okay, I appreciate that, thank you. Did we tell you to have your kid look up to athletes? No, right? But you can't think that way. That is not the right way of thinking. That's defensive. That's I think it's stupid. The way I want to look at it is, okay, you know what? This person actually looks up to athletes, looks up to me, and I should hold myself to higher standards as well. Is that tiring? Is that tough? Yeah, sometimes. Does it make me miserable? No. Just because I'm tired, go get sleep, come back. You still have this platform, right? Tomorrow's another day. So make the best use out of this platform and leave that legacy that you want to leave. It's how you want to look at it.
If you look at it all around, I mean, this life in water, I mean, what has swimming given you?
It's given me the world, man. Like, yeah, it's kind of surreal to actually be going to the swimming pool and watching, spectating, instead of competing, you know? The swimming pool is like your classroom. Like, it teaches you so many things, not just about, you know, like the cliches, like determination, grit, and all that jazz. But it actually teaches you how to be like a better person. So I got all the people around, like Serge, Eddie, Sonia, parents, support team around to thank for that. And without them, I would not be here sitting with you today. No, they've given me that opportunity, that chance to be that mouthpiece, to be able to freely express who I am in the water, all right? No judgment, no hesitation, nothing. Complete trust and love. And to like have to leave all that behind, yeah, it sucks, but you move on to the next chapter, the greater calling. You'll climb another mountaintop. So, yeah, really have to give all this to my team.
Let's jump to 2016, around there. I think we all knew you were fast, but did you think you were that fast?
My second year in college, Eddie came up and he said, I don't think you know how good you are, but I think it's good that you don't know how good you are. So I looked at him, I'm like, Eddie, enough with this double meaning stuff. Just tell me.
You're at Rio. Tell me about the day before the race. Tell me about the day of the race in the call room. What's going on?
Okay, the day before the race was actually supposed to be the 100 free final. And I made semis on that, came out third, but had the wrong race plan, was a bit too relaxed, and didn't make the final for that one, right? And I came out thinking, wow, that really hurt. I don't know how this fly is going to go. Come to the next day, in the heat, Michael's next to me. And I felt like that was one of the easiest races I'd ever swum. Not even tired at all. And almost to the point where I could dictate what I wanted to do, but not only that, what everyone else does. You know, like they're playing in my sandbox. So I came out of that feeling really good. Qualified first, semis, was about 80, 85%. So a lot left in the tank. Still qualified first by over half a second. I'm thinking to myself, is this actually happening? Like, I don't know how it is, but I'm starting to realize that this is my race to lose tomorrow. Fast forward to the next day. The bus ride over was probably the hardest thing that I had to mentally overcome. And I'll tell you what. Can you imagine 10 years of sacrifice? Or actually scratch that. A whole lifetime starting from when I was a kid, my parents, everything that was riding on the line. All bunched up into one ball, sitting in your gut on the way to the Olympic final. Like, that was insane. So I felt like I was having these flashbacks right in front of me, and I had to pull myself together. And once I started my warm-up routine, everything just kind of flowed.
So in the bus, you're thinking about all the things you've been through and to bring you to this day. And
I'm thinking, man, if this goes sideways, number one, financially for my parents, everything that they sacrificed, it's going to go to waste. Number two, not only that, I'm straight into NS right now, you know? So all these things like were on my mind that I had to put in a box and put it aside.
What happens in the call room?
In the call room, Chad was doing his funny stuff with Michael, doing like the shadow boxing and everything. And I didn't even realize it. I was just like listening to music, had my hood on, zoning in. And I see Michael looking around. So I have a great deal of respect for Michael. Went up, gave him a fist bump. He looked at me, gave me a fist bump as well. And it just felt like, okay, I'm about to do something really special. Just the moment in itself was special. But it was just like the feel that I got. It was more like, okay, everyone was thinking about how I was going to swim. And that was going to dictate, like, they were fighting for second place almost. And once I felt like I had my foot down, there was no way I was going to let up. So, yeah.
So the interesting thing is, even though you qualified your heats first, your semis first, you're the only person who cracked 51 seconds. I checked today. Nobody else cracked 51 seconds. You did it twice in that meet. But all that put together, you're still racing Michael Phelps, right? I mean, he's the greatest Olympic athlete of all time. Forget about swimmer. So is that play in your mind at all or no?
Actually, I love it. I love it because Michael and I have completely different, like opposite race strategies. So I'm explosive, I got speed, and go out faster than anyone. And naturally, when I was a kid, I was a 200 swimmer, right? 200 fly. And that gave me the base. as well, no matter how much I cried during that race. So I knew that if I'm going to get out faster and come back equally as fast as you, or, you know, if maybe you're a hair in front of me, you're still not going to catch me. And you also have age on that side. You're 10 years younger. This guy, 31, he swam, I don't know, 12, 13 times already at that age. I swam 4 times up to this point. Like, I'm fresh. I'm ready to go. I'm getting better and better as the meet goes on.
When did you think you had the race won?
The last 35. So I touched the wall. I was a bit long. So I had to glide into the wall a little bit. So that took a bit of momentum off. But I remember being underwater and just feel this surge of energy, like going to like hyperdrive and thinking, oh my gosh, like I'm just going to rip this next 50. I could have kept going and going. And that's when I knew, like, yeah, there's no way.
And you knew you were ahead.
I knew I was ahead.
Because when you turn, you can see nobody is there.
I have a really bad habit. I like to peek. You shouldn't.
Okay. When you guys finished the race in Rio and you were walking down the pool deck talking to Michael, right? So what did he say to you? And did you tell him, I don't know how to feel right now?
So we were walking through and I whispered to him, like, this is awesome. And you've done this 23 times, you know, like, that's crazy. And he's like, yeah, it's pretty cool looking back at it. And he asked me, so you have any plans for tonight? I'm like, no, I got to hop on a flight out the next morning, but I think I'm just going to sleep. I'm really tired. And he looked at me and he smiled. He's like, yeah, you're not going to sleep. You're not going to sleep. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I'm going to sleep. But he was right. I didn't sleep at all.
Didn't sleep?
No, I tried to. I tried to sleep, but I couldn't do it. And I was thinking the entire time, like, okay, what just happened? One, I couldn't believe it. And two, that morning before I flew off, I took a walk by myself to the dining hall, had a bowl of cereal, as I always did every morning, listened to music, watched the sunrise. And I thought to myself, wow, okay, one, this just happened. And two, my life is never going to be the same again. So this is the only time that I had to myself to actually be proud of what I did in that moment. So it was sacred. It was really special, almost like emotional or you know, cathartic.
What's the best compliment or best moment after the race?
Open top bus parade. I didn't want to go for it, to be frank. I can say that now, 7 years later. I didn't want to go for it for one very simple reason. I'm tired and I want to get back to my friends and have some fun. I want to go party, you know? What I did not know was about to happen was all the streets are lined. There are thousands of people. It was a big deal, you know? I'm swimming in Rio thinking people in Singapore don't care about it, right? But to come back to the airport and to that, it's like, okay, it puts things into perspective real fast. And it makes you appreciate what you've actually done. And you need to share this. Just coming back and seeing like how much it meant to everyone, that really put things into perspective for me.
Send your feedback to podcast@sbh.com.sg. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or within our Straits Times app. Thanks for listening.